You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
It was the year of fire.
The year of destruction.
The year we took back what was ours.
It was the year of rebirth.
The year of great sadness.
The year of pain.
And a year of joy.
It was a new age.
It was the end of history.
It was a year everything changed.
The year is 2261. The place, Babylon 5.
Who am I? I am Susan Ivanova, Commander. Daughter of Andrei and Sophie Ivanov. I am the right hand of vengeance. And the boot that is gonna kick your sorry ass all the way back to Earth. I am death incarnate. And the last living thing that you are ever going to see.
It's over because we've decided it's over. Now get the hell out of our galaxy.
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we review an episode of the 1990s sci-fi TV classic Babylon 5. This week, Season 4, Episode 3, The Summoning. I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
And the synopsis. Zach gets a lead on rescuing Garibaldi from his unknown captor, and Dilem faces opposition from the League of Non-Aligned Worlds when she tries to reorganize the Army of Light. Written by JMS and directed by John McPherson, this episode was released on November the 8th, 1996, and takes place from January 11th to January 18th, 2261. And the guest stars, Wayne Alexander as Lorien, Wertham Krimmer as Emperor Cartagia, Chris Lyer as Dome Tech, Eric Zivot as Verano. Ron Campbell as Ambassador Number One. Ardright Chamberlain as the voice of Kosh. Jonathan Chapman as Ambassador Lethke. And Billy Scudder as Ambassador Number Two. Uncredited are Bill Blair as Alien, Louis E. Rosas as Narn, and Jennifer Wellings as Narn Female. Well, there you go. So, guys, what do we think of this episode?
Pretty good episode. They summoned some things, and some stuff happened, and there was a couple of references to 2 weeks, as we enjoyed, and it was good. This is the one of the ones that I remember very well because of the 40 lash of the whip, and if you get 40, you'll die, but if you get 39 and scream, you're okay. I remember that very well. I just didn't know where it came in the season.
Yeah. Dan?
Yeah, I didn't remember the torture scene, but it was something that sort of came back to me as I was watching. It's like, oh, I remember this. This is something that happened. Like, it sort of awoke something in the back of the brain. I really enjoyed the episode. I wonder if it is just it's too much of setting up pieces again. Like, you know, as we've seen throughout all of the other seasons, when we get these episodes where they're setting up the seasons and then there's a bigger episode to come, does it sort of fail? I don't know whether I'm judging this episode more harshly because I know that we're going to be doing, behind the scenes, listeners, we're doing three episodes tonight, and it sort of all leads in together. And I'm wondering, if because I enjoyed the last episode even more, am I going to look a little worse on this episode? So I really enjoy it, but I think there's more to come.
I think this is a great ensemble piece. Everybody here gets a scene. Everybody gets a part. There's nobody missing from the main cast. You know, everybody has a bit to play, which means it packs so much into the episode that it's just so much going on. But I think it's pretty good. I think it's leading up to the, yes, you're right. I mean, maybe I'm looking at this knowing what the next two are going to be like. So I'm thinking this is the good lead up to these two, you know, next these next episodes. But yeah, we'll go through it. I think before we even get to the music and the titles, I was giggling away like a lunatic. So we'll start. This is January 16th, 2261, and everyone Delenn holds dear is gone. It's over 2 weeks, 2 weeks, since Sheridan was killed at Zahadum, and 2 weeks since Mr. Garibaldi has disappeared. Londo has returned to Centauri Prime and has gone missing, looking for Mr. Garibaldi. Ivanova bumps into Delenn and Marcus in the corridors of Babylon 5. Ivanova needs a favour from Delenn. She needs to borrow a white star to see if she can find more of the first ones to help fight against the shadows. Delenn says she will need to take a translator with her, as the ships are crewed by Minbari. Susan says there is no need, she has been teaching herself Minbari. She tries out some on Delenn and Marcus.
You'll need a translator. The crews only speak Minbari. Lanier must stay with me, but...
That's not necessary. I've been teaching myself Minbari. I figured, what the heck? You know, gave me something to do. I can handle the crew.
Ours is a very difficult language.
I know, but it's okay. Flakshaw, Zindrabi, Hatrashul, Endolo Ishiden.
Which translates as engines at full, high power, hat trap rat catcher, to port weapons, brickbat lingerie. Delenn and Marcus are amazed. And she is allowed to go so long as she takes Marcus as the translator.
It's
very good.
Bit of an accent. But yes, very good.
Yes. But in the heat of battle, you must do more than speak Minbari. You must be able to think in our language.
It can take a few seconds to translate an order. We know what can happen in a few seconds. Boom, crash, burn.
Exactly. So Marcus will go with you. Just to help.
That's really not necessary.
Not at all. Love to.
When Susan is out of earshot, she says to Marcus,
tell the crew, anyone who laughs will answer to me personally.
That was a great scene.
It was a great scene. The translation was... I had to go back three or four times just to read it, because it was complex to read, or read quickly. But... yeah, that was so. Already, we've gone through 2 weeks and a you know, brick bat lingerie, whatever one of those is. On the Centauri homeworld, Londo and Veer find an impromptu party. Impromptu party has popped up in the Emperor's throne room. It wasn't on the schedule. The Emperor is being entertained by a new court jester. It's Jakar, and he has not had a drink in 3 days. But all he has to do is ask for it. But his pride will not let him, so they continue to humiliate him for their amusement. Zach Allen has found the information that Jakar was looking for, but he cannot find him to relay the message. He tells Delenn that he has a lead and wants to chase it down before it is too late. As it is too close to the attack deadline and not wanting to send more people to look for Jakar, she allows Zach to go and follow the lead. Londo and Veer are horrified by what they have seen in the Emperor's chambers, but they must play along until the time is right, so they can help Jakar. Veer isn't convinced that Jakar will last long, but Londo believes he has the stamina needed. Suddenly, the Emperor appears with blood on his hands. He is moaning that the new pain technician, is not good enough, and he's been working on Jakar for 2 hours without results.
Damn him, silence! He refuses to bow. He refuses to drink.
Majesty.
Do you know that we assigned him one of our best pain technicians? Pain technicians, they used to be called torturers. Ever since they got organized, it's pain technicians. Why are you here? One of our very best torturers. I felt certain he would break him. 2 hours he worked, not a sound. I said, give me a cry, Rintintzy. Give me a shout, a whimper, a scream. Silence. So I got into it myself. You can't leave these things to others. They never get it right. And... well, you can see for yourself.
The Emperor had threatened to cut off Shikar's hands, but he's passed out before he could do it.
So, towards the end, I decided, cut off his hands. Maybe that will get a reaction.
Great Necker, did you?
No, unfortunately. He passed out before we got that far. Loss of blood, I suppose. Very inconvenient. We'll start again when he's conscious. And this time, if he remains silent... Silence! Where is the joy in that, really? He's so insubordinate. I can't have him challenging my authority that way. I know I made a present of him to you, Mollari, but if I don't get my scream, he'll have to be killed.
All his moaning and performance is enough to convince Veer that the Emperor needs to be killed. Delenn has gone to visit Leta Alexander. When she enters her quarters, she finds a very empty room with just a bed. Apparently, the new Vorlon ambassador told her to remove everything and only allowed the bed as a concession to the human need for sleep. Delenn asks if the Vorlons will help with the attack on Zahadum, but Leta says there is something going on and they have plans of their own, something that they haven't told her yet. Delenn does not want to send all her ships into battle blindly and wants to know what is going on. Leta is reluctant to ask the Vorlons what their plans are, as the new ambassador is very intimidating, but she says she will do what she can. Zach is chasing down the lead he has on Garibaldi, along with a small number of Star Furies. They've caught up on a transport vessel they believe he is on board. After a number of unanswered hails, they shoot the transport shuttle's engines to disable it. Suddenly, a life pod ejects and the shuttle explodes. They pick up the life pod, which contains Mr. Garibaldi, and return to Babylon 5. Mr. Garibaldi has been cling-filmed to a bed. It will keep him fresh up to 14 days and is stronger than handcuffs or zip ties. They rush him straight to Medlab. These scenes confuse me because it was... I would have preferred somebody to have gone into the room, found Garibaldi, cut off the cling film and gone, throw him over his shoulder and carry him out, or, two of them carry him out. There's the heroic sort of effort gone in. Because suddenly he's like... We see a pod eject. We don't know who's in it. Then we see a clip of Garibaldi wrapped in a thing. So I'd thought he was somewhere else. And then suddenly he's in Medlab on the bed.
Yeah, it was a little bit much confusing.
Yeah, it was really strange. Yeah. I would have expected... It would have been better if Zach had gone rushing in and saved him. Chief, I've got you. Come on, we go. And, the bond becomes stronger for it. Not.
Yeah, I think this is the thing I'm holding against this episode, is because it's so desperate to set up quite a lot that will pay off in two episodes' time, I feel like it felt a bit rushed. Like, there was enough... in the previous episodes that we've had up to now, where Marcus was helping Jakar, that I feel like there should have been more sort of pushed that way. Zach was brought into the investigation, so he is then given that heroic rescue, as you say, cutting him free and sort of bringing him out. It just felt like it just happened, and I think that's what brought this episode down for me, knowing that there's better episodes to come.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's this particular line, this particular storyline, is a little bit rushed. They could have made a whole episode out of it. Starting with Jakar and what have you, and then ending up with Garibaldi back. But yeah, it was squeezed in because there was so much other good stuff going on.
Mm.
And again, important stuff for the next few episodes. But they could have had this one first and then put all the other stuff into the next two. But then I think you probably would have had one episode purely about the Centauri later on, because again, there's a lot of good stuff in that as well. Leta is having another one of her sessions with Darth Kosh. He pulls out of her too fast, which hurts her. I've had the same complaint. She asks what he is hiding from her, but he says he is finished with her for now. God, he's just use them and toss them to one side.
How rude.
Yes.
What was this dialogue? I along with the 2 weeks, I just couldn't keep a straight face. You shouldn't have pulled out of me so hard. It was so cold. It's like, what the fuck is going on? Am I watching? Is this the Pornhub version? Did I get the wrong one in the email? Like, what's going on?
it was a bit off.
It was, wasn't it? I mean, just before that, where she's obviously, she's connected to him with the... whatever that is, the wispy stuff, between the eyes and Kosh and all that. All it needed was a brown chicken, brown cow.
No, it didn't need that at all.
I've come to fix your soul.
Yes. And he's got a 1970s tash on him. Dear, oh dear. Start calling him Porn Kosh. I've lost where I am in my notes now. She demands respect and says she has earned some answers. He sends her away, but as she leaves, she tries a surprise telepathic link with him. Darth Kosh uses the Force to smash her against the wall, knocking her out. Londo is visiting Jacquard in his cell. He tells him what he needs is a live ally, not a dead martyr, and tells him to stop being silent and say something.
A little scream. Is that so much to ask for? I know what it is with you. It's your pride. You would rather stay silent than give him the satisfaction of seeing you cry out in pain. I would probably do the same myself, but not now. There's too much at stake. I need a live ally, not a dead martyr.
What you ask, I cannot give.
Is your pride worth more to you than saving your world? We had a deal. You help me with Kataja, I help free Nan.
His pride is getting in the way, and there is too much at stake for him to be a dead martyr. Jakar says,
we do not oblige conquerors. If I give him what he wants, if I beg for mercy, cry out, I would no longer be a Narn.
And if you are dead, are you still a Narn then? No! You are food for Kataja's pets, and your people are still prisoners. They too are no longer Narns, only slaves, and then dead slaves. Is that what you want, Jakar? Is it?
Meanwhile, on the White Star, Marcus asks Ivanova what she would do after the war is over. She says she will visit her father's grave and travel, as it has been 6 years. Sorry, I'm laughing there because I'm thinking ahead.
Yes, I know what you're thinking about.
6 years since she has seen any. It's been 6 years since she's seen any sky. Apologies. Sorry. He asks if there is anyone special waiting for her back home. She says no and asks him the same question.
Anyone special waiting for you back home?
No, not anymore. You?
Someone. She doesn't know it yet.
That's a strange way to pursue a relationship.
I suppose so. I want this thing to go right. I want it to be special.
Oh, a romantic. I don't think I felt that way since the first time.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's a tactic I used for too many years, that, you know, you stand back and just wait for them to come to you, and it, you know, like,
it works like a charm, doesn't it?
For somebody.
You mean you don't? You haven't?
Yes.
You're a.
Exactly.
With anyone?
Never met the right person before.
I thought the first ones were rare. Well, I hope she appreciates it.
So do I.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Trying so hard not to say the word virgin.
Yeah, that was an uncomfortable scene.
Yes. I'm not too sure how old he is or how old he's supposed to be. Might be the same age as me when I was a, you know, because I hadn't with anyone. Anyway, suddenly, enough of my life story. Suddenly they find an anomaly in space. It is as though someone has folded hyperspace into a pocket using Vorlon technology. They fly into it. Well, why not? And, like an orchestra without a conductor, their instruments go all over the place. When they look out of the window, they see a massive Vorlon fleet containing one of the biggest ships seen in Babylon 5. It's a monster of a thing.
It
just, it just dominated the whole picture, and there's little things flying around, and those little things were actually the size of big, you know, they were big things, really. Meanwhile, in Medlab, Mr. Garibaldi is having nightmares or flashbacks when he suddenly wakes up. He recognizes Zach Allen, who tells him the last time anyone saw him was 2 weeks ago. He says,
"How many weeks ago?
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks." He says he does not remember anything from those 2 weeks, but is clearly lying. Zach tells him that Sheridan died at Zahadum. Meanwhile, Dilem receives an ambassador who tells her that the other League worlds are concerned about her plans to attack Zahadum. They think that in doing so, it will provoke a deadly response. Dilem says the response will come either way, and it will come soon. He says that the other worlds are afraid and it might cause them to act against Delenn. There will be a protest later that day that may stir up popular support for them and force the aligned worlds to drop their support for Delenn. She may not like what they say, but they must be free to speak their minds. Malari and Veer have been summoned in the middle of the night. They are shown into a dark room where they are highlighted by a spotlight. A second spotlight reveals the Emperor. This is his private place where he comes to think. Another light reveals Jakar tied to a rock. He is about to be whipped with an electro-whip. Jakar will be whipped until he screams or dies, whichever comes first.
The electro-whip is set to give an increasing level of pain each time it is used. At 40 strokes, it will kill even a Nog. It stops when he screams.
I just say there must be another.
I must have my scream. If he does not scream, he dies at 40.
The guards start to whip Jakar.
Proceed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
After 10 lashes, Jakar is feeling uncomfortable.
11, 12, 13, 14, 15.
At 15, Veer starts to feel sick.
16, 17, 18.
At 18, Jakar is in a lot of pain.
19, 20, 21.
At 21, Malari mouths scream.
22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34.
The whipping continues. At 34, Malari mouths scream again.
35, 36, 37, 38, 39.
At 40, Jakar screams. That was painful. And yeah. Bloody good acting as well.
Mm-hmm. It was.
I mean, you know, the reactions of Veer and Malari were just as powerful as the agony that Andreas Katsalas put into that performance. It was amazing.
Well, that wasn't a performance. He was actually whipped. They wanted it to be as realistic as possible.
Yeah, but he had that rubber back on him. That was really no good, didn't it?
Yeah, there was that.
The White Star returns to Babylon 5, and Ivanova needs to see Leta Alexander immediately. When she arrives at the CNC, an unknown vessel is coming through the jump gate. It is not using standard frequencies, so cannot be hailed. It accesses the docking bay and prepares to dock. Garibaldi, freshly shaved but still wobbly, dons his uniform and joins the security force at the docking bay. At the same time, the protest is starting at the Zocalo. The two main races' representatives stir up the crowd, telling them of the plans to attack Zahadum, and that it would provoke the shadows to respond. Meanwhile, the docking bay is surrounded, and the elevator car carrying the occupants of the unknown ship delivers them to the waiting security detail. When the doors open, Mr. Garibaldi exclaims, "Well, I'll be damned!" Back at the protest, Delenn has arrived in the crowd. Even though the debate would best been held on the gantry with the others, I mean, why join the crowd? You're shouting up, you're talking rubbish. That's not a way to debate something. You're going to get up with them, stand there with them, argue with them, and then you're a little bit safer from the crowd. The crowd support is moving towards the protesters, and things are getting ugly when suddenly a figure appears on the gantry. It's Captain John Sheridan, back from Zahadum and back from the dead.
Captain, we're sorry. We thought you were dead.
I was. I'm better now.
He says that there is a better way than trying to open talks, like the protesters want, and Delenn's plans are a start.
The ambassador is correct. I went to Zahadum. I've seen the face of the enemy. They're not gods, and they're not indestructible. I've fought them, and I've killed many of them. and I've survived. There is a way out of this, a way to stop this insanity once and for all. And Delenn's fleet is a start. Now we have to build on it.
He gives a rousing speech.
Together we will form the largest fleet in history, not just for a battle, but to change the shape of the galaxy. Not just for ourselves, but for our children. And our children's children. You tell your governments that the only man to survive Zahadum sends this message. We can end this, not just for now, not just for the next 1,000 years, but forever!
He says, as the only man to survive Zahadum, he is proof that it can be done.
I stand before you as proof that it can be done. We can fight and we can win, but only if we do it together. Can I count on you? Can I count on you? Will you stand together?
The speech works and Delenn joins him on the gantry. It looks as though they go to kiss and Sheridan swerves. Ivanova finds Lita in her room in a bad way. Lita says to Susan, "You know, don't you? It started." And Ivanova nods her head. I didn't get that bit. I don't know what that was alluding to. Sheridan gives a history reminder of the first ones.
When most of the first ones left, two of them, the Shadows and Vorlon, stayed behind. Now, their job was to keep an eye on the younger races, help them along. But they couldn't decide or agree on what had to be done. The Vorlons believe that strength comes through order and discipline. The Shadows believe in promoting evolution through conflict, starting wars.
Those are diametrically opposite positions.
Exactly. Now, at first, there was a balance between the two sides. Yeah, they abided by rules of engagement, respected each other's positions, but that changed over time.
But Garibaldi is distrustful of Lorien, who has travelled to Babylon 5 with Sheridan. Ivanova enters the room and gets a bigger hug from Sheridan than Delenn did. Marcus and Ivanova tell Sheridan that on their travels they found a Vorlon fleet hiding in hyperspace. Not dozens or hundreds, but thousands of ships, some of them 3 or 4 miles across. They lost them somewhere around Sector 70, where there is a shadow base on a planet in that area. And when they scan for it, it was no longer there. Linnea asks, "The base?" Ivanov says, "No, the planet." Franklin says that there were 4 million people on that planet. I'm not sure what he meant by 4 million people when he's talking about a shadow base. Isn't he talking about 4 million shadow peoples?
Or allies, perhaps? Mm.
The Vorlons are going to take out all of the shadows and anyone else that is touched by them, which means everything within a 70 light year radius. Dum dum dum.
You know what else you can find within a 70 mile radius? This promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network.
This Labor Day weekend, fandom is calling. Let Michael, Mike, Darren, and Jen help you answer the call with the latest news, notes, tips, and tricks on the DragonCon Report. Available as an audio podcast, visit DragonConReport.com, and for the first time ever, watch us on video via Facebook Live and YouTube. We want to help you celebrate your fandom in all the best ways. So listen up, and we'll see you at the con.
Okay, trivia. There is none.
What?
Well, okay. I had to dig a bit because there wasn't any official trivia in the actual IMDb page. But I did find some when I was digging around other things. Wortham Krimmer, who plays Cartagia, who I think I absolutely love the Emperor Cartagia. I love that character. It's just totally bonkers mad and thinks everything is totally rational. And the way he plays evil, so that way, that he just doesn't understand that there's, you know, nobody can believe that what he's saying is incorrect. So his name, a bit of an unusual name, Wortham Krimmer. It's actually an amalgamation of two surnames. Both he and his wife changed their last name after they got married. She was Mary Ellen Wortham, and he was Robert Crimmer. After they were married, they became Robert and Mary Ellen Wortham Crimmer. So he obviously took the two surnames and made it into a stage name.
That works.
Yeah.
So, Sean, are there any Star Trek connections?
I got one. So we've got Chris Lyre, who played the Dome Tech. He was on an Enterprise episode, Cold Station 12, as the deputy director of Cold Station 12.
Yep, excellent.
That's it. That's all I got.
I remember the episode. I don't particularly remember him, but then why would I? Okay, No, he was just like a bit part player in the... He was
deputy director, not even the director.
Not even the director. No. Oh, dear. So, ratings. Obviously, we rate these episodes that we watch out of 5 jump gates, because it's Babylon 5, and IMDb rate theirs out of 10. So they have given this an 8.4, which works out as 4.2 jump gates. Sean, what did you rate this as?
Initially, I was going to give it a 4. Because it's a pretty good episode. It's nothing spectacular. We got big Borlon fleet. We got Marcus as a virgin. We got John back. We got the start of Angry Garibaldi, which I'm not a big fan of. Angry Garibaldi. That's I think my least favorite storyline. But at least it had nothing to do with the Doctor. And then with some of the points that Dan brought up, I was going to go down to 3.75, but I think I'll just stick with a 4.
Very good. Okay. Dan?
Get out of my head, because that's exactly where I'm going as well. I am going for 3.75 because of the Angry Garibaldi, and because there are other parts of future episodes to come that I'm enjoying more. You know, it just suddenly happens that Sheridan appears. Again, I kind of wanted a bit more build up, that Lorien and Sheridan had to fight their way off of Zahadum or something else to happen. They just turn up. The same way Garibaldi just turns up. The same way that the entire Vorlon fleet just happens to be there in a pocket when they turned up. It just kind of feels like it was just setting up, knowing that there's better things to come. And I didn't feel like it gave us enough. Whereas the storyline they really set up with Kataja, with Shakar, and with everyone on Centauri Prime, it paid off really, really well. And that's what pushed the episode back up for me. But because of all those things that kind of didn't work for me, I'm going to go for a 3.75.
Ooh, okay. That's quite amusing, because I'm going to go right in the middle and give it a 4. So that's our average is a 4. You've both gone either side of me. It's exactly the same amount. I do like this episode. I like it a lot. Yes, I don't like Garibaldi as an angry character. It doesn't suit his style. It doesn't suit his acting. It's not that character. It's not even that character that's been altered as a character, if you see what I mean. It just isn't right. And it's also against the character that I like. I like him when he's a little bit funny, he's a bit snarky, but he gets the job done. He's a hard knock. He knows his job inside out. He knows the whole of Babylon 5 and all. Now it just feels like he's just having a go at anybody and everybody. And he's obviously a changed man. I get it. That's fine. I love the Centauri stuff. I was sitting here thinking this, and over the next few episodes, if there's ever a spin-off, the Centauri government should be spun off as like a little political sort of show, but still have those, the Mad Emperor character, the Mad Minister character, who's the one who's coming, Larry. it's just there's so much fun in that and so much humor in that, and they're all killing each other off trying to become the top man or something. So I do like that, and I love the Emperor. But I don't like what he does, but I do like the way he's portrayed. That I think the actor who plays him is brilliant at this character. I've seen him in a couple of other things. He was actually in an episode of Hill Street Blues, which I watched recently. I vaguely remember him, the character he played in that. So yeah, he's really good. I like the bit, you know, the Shikara is obviously, you know, he's been captured, he's been tortured. The scenes with him are amazing. So I think overall, it's a really good episode. It's a definite, you know, above average. It's not a fabulous one. If some of these storylines have been spread out over the previous two episodes, and, you know, sort of use them as the build up to something that happens now and get into the season a bit quicker, I think it would have been better. I would have preferred to have seen one of the earlier episodes, as you know, as we said before, the let's hunt for Garibaldi and have a bit more Shikara and Marcus and that sort of thing. But you know, we didn't get that, so yeah, I think it's a solid 4.
Yeah,
and I wouldn't argue with. To be honest, I wouldn't argue with IMDb really. What did I say? They gave it 4.2. So yeah, I mean it's a minor difference. There's, you know, an extra 0.2. I wouldn't argue with that at all. Okay, so that's the end of this episode. Join us again next week when we will be discussing season 4, episode 4, Falling Towards Apotheosis.
How do you say that?
Apotheosis. It means, oh, I tell you what the meaning means in the next
exciting episode. The Epsilon 3.
If you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send in some feedback to the epsilon3@gmail.com. That's 3 spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search for the Epsilon 3.
Now, if you have any other problems, any other questions at all, just ask.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.